Thank you for joining us today. This is our first podcast of Mobility Now, the podcast that looks at mobility technology sitting at the edge of today, but the center of tomorrow. I'm your host, Amit Mehta.
Hi, I'm your co-host, Dan Davies.
Mobility Now is for people new to the industry, students wanting to enter the industry, and others in the industry that would like to keep up on trends surrounding mobility. Dan, I know you live out in San Francisco. The world is hearing a lot about mass exodus of tech workers. How do you feel about this? Do you think this will drastically change the way people specifically in the Bay Area commute?
Definitely. I mean, you know, with COVID and now we've got the wildfires going on, people are maybe realizing that living in the city without all of the bustling entertainment and the classy restaurants that are here maybe isn't worth the high cost. I do see a lot of apartment vacancies happening. I don't know if it qualifies as an exodus, but definitely there's people leaving the city.
Let me ask you a little about your commute. So I know, Dan, you used to travel out from San Francisco all the way to Sunnyvale using the train. It would take about 2 hours, but you had like a multimodal commute. So you would sometimes you would take a streetcar. Sometimes you would take a one of those e-scooters.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd walk. Has that drastically changed? Do you still see a lot of e-scooters on the street? Is a streetcar operating more or less?
Yeah. So the cable car's completely shut down. That was kind of a sad moment because there were a couple occasions when I had the opportunity to use that for a part of my commute. The e-scooters are still kind of around. People are using them on and off. Definitely not as much as before. And then, you know, that BART and Caltrain ridership is way down. So, yeah, I think commuting has profoundly changed for a lot of people, and I think it's going to continue to be that way for some time.
So, Dan, I know your commute has kind of shrunk since you originally started. You're now traveling only 3 feet probably from your bed to your desk there. But you just said something interesting. You said the commute's going to change for some time. What does that mean? What does some time mean?
Yeah, I'd say probably a couple years. I mean, that's how long they're saying that this pandemic is going to last. And as long as the pandemic and the shutdown is happening, I think the commute in the Bay Area will remain profound. But if we're to talk a little bit longer term, you know, in the automotive industry, we say 5 years is about one major vehicle model change. So if we were to say 5 years in the future, I think, especially in our industry, right, in the automotive industry, vehicle manufacturer has a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of people with different skill sets that need to come together to prototype, test, and innovate. And that needs to happen again. There was a reason we had offices before COVID, and I can see us going back to the office to at least to some extent after COVID. And I think that means we get back to commuting and back to a reliance on personal vehicles.
You see, I think you said a lot there. So let me back up for a minute. You said that we're going to come back to commuting. There's COVID, there's fires. Is there a lot of technology that's changing in the city right now to address what's happening?
For specifically automotive, even though we might be driving less and spending less time in our cars for now, we can see in the industry that the automotive technology is pushing forward. There's a lot of new ADAS features being developed. Autonomous vehicle testing is still going forward. I see a lot of the autonomous vehicles driving around on the road. I think sensor technology is continuing to improve. And speaking of sensors, we actually have a great guest with us today to talk about one of those sensors. It's the LiDAR sensor that sometimes you see these on the bubble on the top of the cars. It's an important sensor that's been developing a lot in recent years, and I'm looking forward to talking about that a little more. So our guest today is the newly appointed Chief Marketing Officer at Cepton, Dr. T.R. Ramachandran. Congratulations, T.R., and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Dan. Great to be with you and Amit.
Thanks, T.R.
So T.R. has, you have over 20 years of expertise in the technology sector. You've been bringing advanced IC and system products to market and scaling them up to high volume. And now you're working on LiDAR for automotive. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got into LiDAR?
Sure. It's sort of interesting, you know, LiDAR, and we'll talk maybe a little bit more about LiDAR in a few minutes, but people think of LiDAR, those who know about it, think about, you know, automation and robotics and self-driving. So maybe I'll start with a little bit of my history, which may explain why I got attracted to this market. So when I did my PhD, this was at USC, University of Southern California in Great. Los Angeles. My focus, my major was material science, but I was focused more on, you know, solid state materials, nanotechnology, you know, things like that. And I was a grad student at the time under this great professor, Anupam Madhukar. He had this huge lab and a team of students and postdocs. The lab was called the Photonic Materials and Devices Lab. Mm-hmm. And my focus, along with some of my fellow travelers at the time, was sort of atomic scale studies of a lot of materials, especially optoelectronic materials, like the, you know, some of the materials used in the LiDAR industry, to organic materials, molecules like proteins and DNA. In fact, one of my first projects was to build what was at the time, I'd say the world's first, maybe one of the first ultra-high vacuum, sort of a combined scanning tunneling atomic force and non-contact atomic force microscope, and mm-hmm. which was all interconnected to a what is called a molecular beam epitaxy chamber, where we were growing these optoelectronic films. And so we had to set this up in a dense clean room with a ton of interconnected equipment in the fifth floor of a high-rise building, okay, at USC. And I say fifth floor because we were near one of the major highways. And during rush hour, what that meant was, you know, the vibration from all that traffic, since you're talking about traffic, would transmit to the building. And to the microscope, and on an atomic scale, that was huge, right? I'm talking about a microscope where you can resolve individual atoms. So now we had to build in two or three levels of very advanced vibration isolation, but the problem is the resonance of the system was very low. It was pretty close to that vibration. So I used to joke that I could basically use my microscope, my STM, to tell what time of day it was, right? And when it was rush hour.
From the traffic, yeah.
That's right. Now, being very inquisitive by nature at the time, I also volunteered to join a what was at the time, again, a path-breaking project, which led to a university-wide competition and an award, a multi-year research award to a team between my advisor, another professor in the chemistry department, Professor Bruce Kale, and then a professor in the computer science robotics group, Professor Ari Rakisha. And we created this lab called the Laboratory for Molecular Robotics. Okay. So LMR at the time was one of the first in the world, if not the very first, to focus on robotic manipulation of atomic or molecular scale structures. This is on surfaces of materials in smog-ridden Los Angeles air. So you may all remember there was a time when there was this group at IBM, I think it was Zurich, where they, at liquid helium temperatures, they positioned either xenon or some other atoms to write the words IBM. Using those atoms. Do you remember that? Or maybe you guys are too young for that. But so what we said was, let's do stuff like that, but in air. Let's not do this liquid helium temperature thing. So the reason I give you this background is today we talk of this world of AI and robotics, and things are being moved around by robotic arms and all this automation. Imagine we were doing that over 20 years ago, but the things we were moving were molecular clusters. And then we were inventing really cool new techniques to move these clusters around to create predetermined patterns. Like, for example, writing USC with it.
Okay.
So that's where I started. So you can imagine I've always had an interest in sort of the field of robotics, even though I was not a CS major, so to speak. Now, after I did that, since a lot of my focus was sort of atomic level, molecular level, electronics, optoelectronics, I initially went into the semiconductor industry. At the time, there was this company, LSI Logic, pioneer in ASICs. I had the fortune of working with a lot of great people there in a variety of roles. I did so many different roles, manufacturing, engineering, program management, product, quality, new product introduction, bunch of things. So I learned a ton through that process. Eventually became an executive, and I think it was around 2014, the company was acquired by what is today called Broadcom. So at the time it was Avago. Okay.
Yeah.
And so a number of us, me and several of my colleagues, we left after that. And then I decided, okay, I'm just going to do a startup for a couple of years in a completely different area I knew nothing about, just software. had some fun doing that. And then my team got acquired. And then I was trying to decide, okay, what do I do next? Mm-hmm. And then I was starting to catch up with some friends and colleagues. And one of them told me he had started working at this interesting company called Velodyne LiDAR. I looked them up on the website. I learned, automation, robotics, driverless cars. And another friend of mine knew one of the senior execs there. And before I knew it, one thing led to another, and I was hired there as VP of product. So that's sort of how I ended up in the LiDAR industry. And then, of course, Velodyne, as you said, is well known for the 360 rotating LiDARs used in these autonomous vehicles. I had two great years there. Then I decided I wanted to move to a company where I can really help make big advancements in these sort of forward-looking LiDARs that are used in passenger vehicles, advanced driver assistance systems or ADAS, and that company was Cepton. So that's when I joined Cepton over a year ago.
That's quite an impressive record. So I want to break it down and ask a little forward question, I guess, is it looks like you were involved in robotics and mobility and automation very early on in your career, before it even became popular. Now they're all buzzwords and everybody's hearing about it.
Before
it was cool, you could say. But jumping into that, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You have to have some foresight that you think this is going to take off. Even mobility now, it's been, you could say it's delayed, getting sensors on vehicles delayed. And you've been in the industry for quite a while. I mean, you could even say that you were in the industry while you were doing your graduate studies. How do you have that foresight, and how do you have the vision to know and to see that this is the field I want to study and be in?
That's a great question. I think in this case, I'll have to admit it's a bit more just making a bet that having seen some proof point, because by the time I joined Velodyne, I'd already seen these articles about these so-called, self-driving vehicles. Well, I should probably say driverless, because every time I say self-driving to my mom, she says, how's that different when she's self-drives her own car? So if you think of driverless vehicles, some of the articles that were being discussed about them at the time when I started my, focus on LiDAR, it felt like the advancements in compute and storage that had happened over a two-decade time frame, and the advancements in networking, has brought a level of, performance and maturity that maybe could finally enable these types of advanced automation, right? So if you go back to that, 20 years back, what we were trying to do. I still remember as I was talking to colleagues in the robotics department, they were still hampered a bit. I mean, sometimes you had to do this type of work on those days supercomputers, right? And now you have almost like a supercomputer in your hand. So, and coming from a company like LSI, which was a leader in networking and storage technologies, I was sort of at the forefront of seeing how dramatically those technologies were improving. So I felt that maybe it is time. It's time that these technologies that rely on the need for very sophisticated processing and communication finally have the ability to become more mature and therefore become practical in day-to-day terms, right? So so that was a judgment call that made me say, okay, let's go give this a shot.
Very cool. And so then you got into it, and now you're in one of the market leading LiDAR companies that are out there. Definitely a lot of automotive traction that you have. You've been in the news several times. Tell us a little bit more about Cepton and your LiDAR technology.
Sure. You know, talking of atoms and molecules, you know, my boss and Cepton CEO, Junpei, told me that he and the co-founders, when they founded this company back in 2016, they came up with this name Cepton to denote a unit of perception, right? So you think of perception, and the word septon sort of was derived from it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's sort of a play on photon and electron. I thought that was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, and so they wanted to really focus on this sort of a long-range, high-performance LiDAR. And Jun himself previously had been also at Velodyne, not overlapping with me, but many years before that. He was one of the very early pioneers in LiDAR. He headed engineering for Velodyne back in those days. And then he had left on a different startup and then decided to come back into the LiDAR space. And this time around, his vision was, let's focus on building compact LiDARs that are easy to integrate in cars that can be used for, you know, not just fully driverless vehicles, but especially what we call passenger vehicles, right? So that can be in the mass market. So maybe if it's helpful, I'll also say a little bit about LiDAR for those who are wondering, what is this LiDAR thing that these guys are talking about? So LiDAR, short form for light detection and ranging. It's similar to the word radar, right? Which is for radio detection and ranging. The difference is radar uses microwaves. LiDAR uses typically infrared light. And the principle is very simple. You shine a beam of light on something. The light reflects off it. You have a receiver that captures the reflection. And at the time the reflected light is captured, you have an idea of the time it took for the light to come back, the time of flight. And we know the speed of light, so you can calculate the distance to the object that reflected that light. Now, you then do this over millions of times a second or hundreds of thousands of times a second, and you basically go around the whole environment, scanning it, so to speak. What you get is this beautiful 3D image, which is sort of like something that allows, if you mount the LiDAR on a car, it gives the car a way to almost feel and touch the environment around it. Right, knows what's where around you. So that's the beauty of LiDAR. And so when you think about automotive and driver assistance systems, which increase safety, LiDAR is primarily all about safety. How to improve safety, how to tell the car what's around it so it can navigate safely around things, so it can brake correctly, all of that, right? So the nice thing is we have, as you mentioned, a lot of strong engagements with many automotive OEMs, and of course, a fantastic collaboration with your colleagues at NAL and Koito as well.
Great. So you said a lot there. And one thing I'd like to understand is, where is LiDAR headed? You've been part of a couple companies so far. And is LiDAR going to be a household name like the iPhone, where everyone has to have one? Or is it in the background as a B2B model? I know some of the iPhone technology now has some SPAD arrays that it can detect your face and with a single photon and then unlock it. Is that where the direction is headed on LiDAR? You said you're moving towards more of a smaller, compact, solid state type unit. How small can this potentially go? Can it be everywhere that we want it to be? And the reason I ask is there's a lot going on right now. 2020 has been a tough year for us. There's COVID in California. There's a lot of fires happening. Can LiDAR help in any of those applications as well?
Absolutely. I think LiDAR, I do think LiDAR is going to be everywhere in a few years. And the nice thing about LiDAR is, compared to cameras, where cameras also have this, you know, they're all over the place, but they have some privacy implications. LiDAR is sort of anonymized data, right? You can't really identify people with it. And it can, in some cases, really complement cameras while providing privacy. In some cases, it can do things that cameras cannot. For example, LiDAR works very well in darkness, in shadows. It works better than cameras when it's raining. So there are a number of cases where LiDARs are going to start showing up, whether it's, for example, in the security market. You mentioned COVID. There are applications using Cepton's solutions where customers use the LiDAR to create these intelligent solutions which help with social distancing, which help with crowd analysis, help, if you're in a retail store or a large arena, help understand how many people there are. Is it safe? Does the place need to be cleaned? You know, things like that. LiDARs are also increasingly showing up at traffic intersections because you can use it to detect pedestrians and vehicles, really help improve safety once you know what's happening, potentially transmit the information about what's happening in the intersection to vehicles that are maybe a mile away. So that's yet another example. So there are so many different applications, and Cepton's LiDARs are used in several of these, that we have this very nice window into how the world of LiDAR is proliferating across a range of these use cases.
So what I hear is LiDAR is basically hitting every vertical, every industry. And yes, finding that right product market fit is what's really the issue right now. How do we make it fit into our market? We need it. We don't know how it fits in our market, but we definitely have to put it somewhere. So yes, let's just put myself if I was a OEM executive or I'm a tier one supplier executive, and I'm focusing on strategy over the next 3 to 5 or 5 to 7 years, should LiDAR be in my bucket, or am I jumping the gun and thinking I'll be okay looking at some other technologies? And, you know, there's new technologies coming out every day. Do I need LiDAR right now? Because 10 years ago, I would have said no. Now we're 10 years along the path, and I'd say, okay, yeah, I do need LiDAR at this point. But what about 10 years from now? Will I still need LiDAR?
Right, right. You can sort of, the way to start, at least I suggest, the way to start thinking about that question is to look at the so-called driverless car market, right? So you have companies like Waymo and Argo, which is a part of Ford, Cruise, which is a part of GM. A number of these some startups, some bigger companies, which have these driverless vehicle fleets. Of course, many of them have a safety driver because they're still trying to learn and, you know, solve some last mile challenges. But all of these started with an important premise, which is they need LiDAR in order to drive the vehicle safely in an autonomous fashion. So there was no doubt with any of them that you can't do this without LiDAR. So if you start with that premise, it's very obvious that people who have the deepest experience in this industry, who've been doing solving the problem of driverless vehicles, or how to enable vehicles to navigate in cities and highways without a driver, people have been doing that for years and years. They trust LiDAR. They believe, yep, you cannot solve this problem without LiDAR. So now if you walk down from there, and those sort of vehicles are in a industry terminology sometimes called level 4 automation vehicles. So if you walk down from level 4, you come to level 3 and then to level 2. Level 2 is where many of the advanced passenger cars are today. These are the ones that have, you know, things like cool features, or what are called ADAS features, advanced driver assistance systems. And they have features which allow the car to stay in a lane, you know, like a lane keep assist, or it allows a car to brake when it detects an object in front automatically, automated, you know, electronic braking. Those are sort of level 2 vehicles, which currently do not use LiDAR, most of them. They use radars and cameras. And one of the stumbling blocks for many years for maybe executives and technical leaders at automotive companies has been, hey, I would love to put a LiDAR here, but it's too expensive, right? So many years ago, the worry was, no, these LiDARs are just going to cost thousands of dollars. We simply are not, we can't sell many cars if it's that expensive. The beauty of this is that prices of LiDARs are plummeting. So LiDAR prices are coming down from the, you know, tens of thousands associated with some of the early companies to below $1,000, sometimes below $500. Now we're talking about, and I mean it on scale, at volume. So now we're talking about the ability of these automotive OEMs to say, oh, price may no longer be a problem. Now let's just talk about how do we find the right LiDAR? Mm-hmm. And then which is the first platform that we should intercept with the LiDAR? Do we have the right team to help integrate it and combine it with the rest of our sensors in the vehicle and make the vehicle go from, say, level 2 closer to what is called level 3, which is an even more advanced level of sort of automation or driverless automation between level 2 and 4.
Great. So there's kind of two things happening here. On one hand, we have automotive companies trying to improve the ADAS and the safety features that are coming with the cars. We know that safety is a big seller for cars these days. And on the other hand, this technology that can be very helpful for that, LiDAR, has come down in costs to get to the level where it can actually be accepted by an industry that's traditionally been very cost sensitive, right? We all know that cost is important. So it looks like there's a lot of opportunity going forward for LiDAR in the automotive space. But the automotive space is this very old, traditional industry, right? And one of the really exciting things about it, you mentioned a few of these new companies like Waymo, Velodyne, and your company Cepton as well. Relatively new companies getting into the space, and we've seen a lot of cooperation between the old school companies that have been around for hundreds of years. Our company is one of those. And the newer technology companies that are on the cutting edge of technology. And I think Cepton's been very successful in engaging automotive companies. I was wondering what are some of the challenges that came up during those interactions that you had with automotive OEMs and tier ones like ourselves, and how did you overcome those?
Great question. So if you're an automotive company, I'm going to sort of maybe simplify this a little bit. If you're in the business of selling cars, there are two things that matter the most, right? There's safety, which is the car going to keep the driver and the passenger safe? And is it reliable, right? Is it going to break down? Is it going to have problems that make it painful to own the car? So a lot of the automotive OEMs are focused on safety and reliability. So when they look to incorporate a completely new technology like LiDAR, or relatively new technology like LiDAR, one of the things that they're going to pay attention to is, yes, in principle, this sensor is going to make the car safer and allow it to be more automated, but is the technology inherently safe and reliable? And traditionally, these companies have relied on their major suppliers, or called so-called automotive tier one partners, to provide them that assurance of safety and reliability. So to get into this market, one of the very first things you realize is that the best path to market is you have a technology as well as a collaboration with a leading and respected tier one. So if you have a partner, a tier one partner, that is willing to collaborate with you and say, hey, you, the LiDAR supplier, focus on the innovation, focus on the design, and then you hand me a design, I'll help you make it manufacturable so that it's more reliable and safe. That is a perfect combination, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And the nice thing is, that's what we did working with Koito. So the collaboration with Koito started, I'd say, well over a year and a half ago, but it really picked up steam, I'd say maybe around the middle of last year. And I remember distinctly, especially after I joined Cepton. And it was a big part of that collaboration is what helps small startups like us really hit well beyond our size, right? Have an impact well beyond our size. So we innovate, and innovation here is, it's not just, oh, I built something cool. It's, have we identified and solved an important problem for the end customer? Or you can, the simpler phrase for that is product market fit. And
right, yeah.
So you solve the product market fit by innovation. Be very customer-centric to make sure that you address all the key things the customer really cares about that are the most important. Then you partner with a tier one for solving the scale problem, and then have great teamwork. So this combination of things, I think, really helps deliver success for the end customer.
That's great. I think you wrapped up everything in a very concise way, and I think the audience will actually appreciate that. But now I'm going to bring up the elephant in the room, TR. The youngest, smallest, arguably most successful electric OEM startup that has kind of definitely disrupted and will continue to disrupt transportation has closed over $2,000 a share and has a higher market cap than the world's largest employer. How do you translate this? Because to me, I feel like there's a big disconnect between what's happening in the Valley and what's happening in Detroit. Detroit's more about validation, qualification, making sure, as you just said, we're safe and we are reliable. Whereas Silicon Valley, the mindset is very much about an MVP, a minimum viable product, releasing something and fixing it through different iterations as we learn more about it. I feel like the Tesla car is like that. Of course, they take safety into account, but there's a giant disconnect of how they're shipping their vehicles, how much revenue they're making compared to what Detroit's actually making, the big three, or even Toyota and Honda and Nissan. How do you feel like about that being a startup? Which way do you play? Do you play towards the technology roadmap, or do you play towards the safety and reliability? Or do you see in the future we can actually merge them and connect it?
Interesting question. I'd say in the future, there will be a connection. There's no doubt about that. Because, Tesla scale is still relatively small compared to the big OEMs, right? So a lot of the reason their valuation is so high, and then, some of the other electric vehicle OEMs have these huge valuations, even though they haven't shipped many cars at all, right? So, and I do think there is a little bit of a bubble going on too in the market. But if you set aside that, the market is basically saying there is this disruption called an electric vehicle, and it's a proven concept. There are a lot of people who like it. We have a real challenge called climate change, where there's this worldwide effort to address greenhouse gas emissions, switch to more friendly technologies, and electric is definitely going to play a big role in that. So a big part of the Tesla story is really the electric story, right? So that's the first point I'd make.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The second point, to your point about this whole, do we iterate and fix, or do we look for, let's just get everything right by the time we get it out? That's an interesting aspect, because I do think some of the OEMs are going to be forced to innovate faster because of this competition. And to some degree, you see that, right? When you look at Ford having acquired Argo AI, or GM having acquired Cruise, it's a statement from those companies that, yes, we need this sort of innovation to happen in parallel with our focus on safety and reliability, right? And so they're now trying to make this work together and trying to evolve their own, the way they do their own R&D. So I think that's going to happen. And then there's a third element, and maybe I don't know if that's something you had in mind about the connection to LiDAR. Was that also part of your question, or?
No, just the general merging of how it's merging together. I think you've answered most of that, and how you felt technology and vehicles will merge together in the future and provide this seamless transportation system for society.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think there was one point about, bringing up Tesla and LiDAR. So this has kind of been the news quite a bit, but Elon Musk calling LiDAR a fool's errand. What do you think about this?
I'll use another example before I comment specifically on LiDAR. In March of this year, I think it was early March, March 6th or something, Elon Musk tweeted that the coronavirus panic is dump. Okay. And then on the 19th of March, his statement on Twitter was, based on current trends, probably close to zero new cases in the US too by the end of April. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in my experience, and I've worked with lots and lots of smart people over the years, right from my PhD years. I mean, my advisor, PhD advisor, used to be a student of Nobel Prize winner Richard Feynman. One of the people I worked with to build the, that STM I talked about, he came from the lab of one of the Nobel Prize winners in physics. So I've worked with a lot of smart people, and it's fair to say that a lot of smart people who are very smart in one area think they're smart in everything, and that's not true. Mm-hmm. So I take a lot of these things, I would take all these things under advisement. I don't automatically accept pronouncements by smart people on matters they don't know much about. In fact, when I first saw that Elon Musk tweet, I said, okay, this guy probably didn't take, do a class on exponentials in high school. So, coming back to his comment on LiDAR, here's the thing. Elon Musk has been saying this sort of thing for years.
Yeah.
Not only that, he's been saying, oh, we'll have a self-driving Tesla anytime now. In 2015, he said self-driving cars, Teslas will be in the US by summer. Then he said cars, Teslas will drive themselves in 2 years. And it's almost like every year or every other year he was making this pronouncement this Tesla is going to be self-driving, and it never really happened, right? In fact, back in 2019, he posted a tweet saying, here's Tesla full self-driving. And then there was a public interest group, without mentioning him, posted a comment that same day, basically saying, it's damaging to public discussion when you have misleading statements like a car is self-driving when it really is not. Right. And the reality is Teslas are not self-driving. They don't have LiDAR, but they're not self-driving. They're just a litany of examples. You can just find them on the web where you do see the cars struggle in many situations that are common in day-to-day life. It's still a great car. It's still advancing safety. It's making people's lives better. But there are gaps that their technology does not solve. And that's what LiDAR is going to solve.
Great. I think that was an excellent answer. Summarized everything that we were trying to kind of get some insight out of this, what's going on in the world and Elon Musk's attitude towards LiDAR. We appreciate having you today, TR. It was a real pleasure talking to you. I just have one last question for you. This is a new field. A lot of schools are kind of antiquated in what they're teaching, and we're going through a massive change right now in mobility, and the real drive behind that is development of AI. For students that want to enter into this field, whether it be LiDAR, mobility, or even anything else surrounding the areas of IoT, what do you recommend they should do?
Students have, the interesting thing in this industry, just because of the extent of disruption and this introduction of new technologies, which are sort of revolutionizing different industries, the nice thing about that is when something is new and it's new to an industry, there are not a lot of experts in that thing, in that industry, right? So therefore, there's a lot of scope for people who are fresh out of school or college, who want to get their hands dirty, just go in and just start learning, right? It's not like there are a million people who already know everything about the space, because guess what? The space has just been created maybe 2 years ago. So that's the beauty of it. So in terms of suggestions, I would say just be bold, just go try it out. Just pick something, get your hands dirty, just start working on it. And it could be in any role. It could be in engineering, like how I started. It could be, if you're not an engineer by profession, there's a lot of other functions which are needed for the success of this industry. Could be program management, could be marketing, it could be supply chain, because supply chain is an example where you bring in these new sensors, they need all these interesting components, you have to have a supplier base that is able to supply it in volume. So if you look at every single type of career path, the nice thing is people are going to be needed in all those functions. So whatever your aspiration, there's a very high probability you will find something. Just pick a place, get started, demonstrate your capability, and then that'll be the foundation from which you can build the rest.
Okay, great. So yeah, seek out those experts, and you got to start somewhere. I think it's good to find a place where you can start networking, right? And when you meet the experts in the field that you're interested in, that'll kind of serve as a springboard to your next step. I think, TR, you've certainly done that throughout your career when you were sharing your impressive resume of how you got to Cepton. Thank you very much for your explanation.
Thanks so much, Dan. Thanks. Thanks, Amit.
Yep. Thanks for being here. And I guess we'll see you next time on Mobility Now, where our guest will be John Jin, CEO of Loonwave, a high-resolution 3D printed radar. Thanks, everyone.